My daughter is really into lip balm right now. She'll take the whole tube of it and just smear it onto her face. I've lost a lot of lip balm to this. They're discounted after the holidays just because they're shaped like Christmas trees, but they work just as well.
Post-Christmas discounts are some of my favorite things.
So, hey, these lip balms, they were 90% off because they have little holiday wrappers on it or something. So I figured, let's get this set of four lip balms for $2. Perfect. I'll have them in my pocket. She'll be happy. But when I got home, I turned the lip balm over, the package of it, and it had all of these artificial dyes. May contain red dye, blue dye, yellow dye, all these numbers. And I didn't really know what to make of that. So I called you, Alicia.
I'm Googling this one. Do you want to get started?
Let's get started. Welcome. This is Rolling Forward Podcast.
I'm Dr. Alicia Rowland.
I'm Dr. Stephanie Rowland.
And
we like to talk about science and facts.
So today we're going to talk about synthetic dyes, what they are, why are people concerned or not concerned, and what's currently happening, and what changes we might see in the coming future with synthetic dyes.
And there's a large conversation happening right now around red dyes specifically.
So let's start with a little bit of a story time.
I love story time.
So in the 1950s, it was Halloween.
I love Halloween.
Everyone was going trick-or-treating. There was none of that. I think there was like that concern about poisoned food, right? When we were growing up, there was that idea that like Halloween candy can be poisoned. This year, actually, the Halloween candy was poisoned. And after Halloween, dozens of kids got sick with really severe diarrhea, had some vomiting, had some rashes. It wasn't like widespread. No one died. But it was linked back to a synthetic dye called Orange Number One.
I've never heard of Orange Number One.
It's because it's not available anymore.
And why isn't it available?
Because it was not good for you.
So it sounds like this particular Halloween, a lot of kids got candy with Orange Number One in it. And then it led to widespread diarrhea.
It made candy a very beautiful orange color. And then it led to widespread diarrhea. And the FDA realized that maybe we should have a little bit more regulation on what's included in food.
And so that led to the first regulation of dyes in food.
It led to some of the first regulations. So dyes were approved in the early 1900s. Orange Number One was approved, I think, in like 1906. And it was in the 1950s, 1960s that they realized that maybe this should be regulated a little bit more closely. And Orange Number One became banned at that time. In the 1950s to 1960s, they approved a total of 9 synthetic dyes, all of which are still in use today. There's a total of 36 dyes or color additives available in foods that are currently available, 9 of which are synthetic, which means that they are not coming from a natural food product. So sometimes things are dyed red using beet juice, and sometimes things are dyed red with red number 40, which is a dye that has been created and is not part of a natural food product. So all color additives, food dyes, need to be approved by the FDA before they're used in foods, in cosmetics, and in pharmaceuticals.
That makes sense. That's the role of the FDA or the Food and Drug Administration, is to regulate food and drugs.
In the 1960s, when they started passing more legislation, they created something called the Delaney Clause. It's part of the U.S. Drug and Cosmetic Act, and it prohibits the addition of any chemical to foods that has been found to cause cancer in humans or in animals. It's essentially like a zero tolerance policy that if there is any possibility that it can cause cancer in humans or in animals, that we can't allow it in our food.
That makes sense. I don't want my food to cause cancer.
Agreed. So the kind of controversy, or why we're talking about this today, is that there's a lot of rhetoric around specifically red dye number 3. Red dye number 3 is a color additive, and it's made from petroleum, and it's what gives food and drinks that bright, really cherry red color.
I feel like petroleum in food is not a good decision.
It's probably not great to be drinking petroleum. But there are lots of things that we eat and drink, even naturally, that have kind of products in them, that you wouldn't necessarily want to eat arsenic, but there's like arsenic in apples and other things. And so the idea is like in small amounts, it can be okay.
So what's happening now with red dye number 3?
So in the 1990s, the FDA denied a petition to authorize the use of red dye number 3 in cosmetics and topical drugs. And that was due to some newer data showing that there was potentially a risk of increased animal cancers with the use of red dye number 3, specifically rat thyroid cancer. But what was interesting is that it was already approved for use in foods and ingested drugs.
So what you're telling me is that in the 1990s, they banned use of red dye number 3 in skincare products, makeup, things like that, because of a concern for cancer, but it was already in our food?
Yes, exactly.
And so is it still in our food?
It's still in our food.
And is this what everyone's talking about right now?
This is what everyone's talking about. So when they decided not to allow it in topical products, they had made a statement that their next step was going to be to remove it from food and ingested medications. But they never actually did.
Yeah, that's pretty much 30 years ago. And we've been eating it for the past 30 years.
Yeah, and it's still available for the past 30 years. But what's really interesting is that the FDA had made a statement that they were planning to remove it from food, that it was their kind of goal was to remove it. But through the Delaney Clause, it's actually probably illegal for it to be in food, saying because the law or the policy is saying that anything that might potentially cause cancer needs to be removed. If you go to the FDA website, it specifically states that the mechanism by which it's proposed that red dye might potentially cause thyroid cancer in rats is not compatible with how it would happen in humans. And so they don't think it's translatable. And so they specifically say that because the studies that show possible rat thyroid and cancer, it does not raise safety concerns. And so they have not taken action to remove the use of red dye number 3 in foods.
So if this has been going on for more than 30 years, why are people talking about it now?
That's a really good question. And it's becoming more and more popular to hear about red dye in the media. A petition was filed with the FDA in 2022 to revoke the use of red dye number 3 in food. And that's currently being reviewed by the FDA.
Are there other places that have already banned the use of red dye?
Red dye is currently banned in a lot of places across the world, including all of the European Union, Japan, Australia, and New Zealand.
And that's red dye number 3.
And that's specifically red dye number 3. What's particularly interesting is that it's starting to be introduced in legislation across the U.S.
I saw something yesterday about California has been really concerned about this.
So California is the first state to actually pass a law banning red dye number 3, and they are phasing out red dye number 3 by 2027.
Wow, that's very, so they're doing that on their own. So
they're doing it completely on their own, and at least 10 other states have introduced similar legislation to their state Congress, but it has not yet passed anywhere else.
It's interesting because California has such a large economy that when you think about companies that are shipping products to California, if they can't have red dye number 3 in it, this might even just lead to a removal of red dye number 3 for ease of use.
Exactly. It's so expensive to create different products to package them differently for different states. And California is such a large state that it's expected that this actually might lead to a national ban just by California alone banning red dye number 3.
And there's been ways that we've already seen this happen with things like Skittles and M&M. Since red dye number 3 can't be used in Europe, they're making Skittles and M&Ms differently in Europe, and they've just started making them the same way for the United States.
Exactly. So we're seeing lots of companies already removing red dye number 3 from their products. And it'll be interesting to see how this progresses over the next few years.
So it sounds like RFK Jr., he's been concerned about food dyes causing cancer. And then Governor Newsom in California also now is concerned about food dye. Is this a rare area of agreement for them?
I think this is an area of agreement. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in Congress. There are statements that RFK Jr. makes that are very sensical, like food is medicine. And he will say things that sound true because they are. And then he'll back it up with things like raw milk is the answer. And that's where he loses me a little bit. But food is medicine and there might be some risks to dyes.
He loses me a lot with the raw milk. It's also really interesting that given RFK Jr.'s claims that food dyes cause cancer and that this is a national conversation right now, he hasn't actually said anything about what his policy is going to be about food dyes.
Has made no statements about his policy about food dyes.
It's interesting that a lot of our discussion so far has really focused on the cancer risk for red dye number 3. But as a psychiatrist, what I hear from parents, what they're concerned about are behavioral changes. And on TikTok and social media is that people have been really concerned about behaviors related to red dyes.
Are there foods that can actually make you crazy?
I thought it was a myth. I thought it was a joke. If your kids are just breaking down emotionally, just see if there's dye in the food. I'm telling you, it is not a myth.
Yeah, so I think the reason why people have been talking about red dyes more recently has been about the concerns about neurobehavioral changes in kids, specifically hyperactivity.
So if this has been going on for more than 30 years, why are people talking about it now?
That's a really good question. And it's becoming more and more popular to hear about red dye in the media. A petition was filed with the FDA in 2022 to revoke the use of red dye number 3 in food. And that's currently being reviewed by the FDA.
My 3-year-old was having tantrums every single day, sometimes multiple times a day. So my husband and I decided to take dyes out of her diet.
We are a red dye 40-free family. I am new at this, but I just did research on some behavioral things with my kids.
Here's how I found out that red dye 40 was contributing to my behavioral issues.
So I think people talk about red dye number 3 and red dye number 40, a lot about this idea of hyperactivity in kids, but the legality, I think, is more around the cancer with red dye number 3.
That's interesting. So right now, people are focusing on removing red dye number 3 because of the cancer risk, and the Delaney Clause allows you to do that. But what we're really hearing from parents that they're worried about is hyperactivity. And it's something that I've looked at before as well with families that have asked me, and it seems like it's really hard to know what the evidence is there.
It's super hard to know what the evidence is. So some people are concerned that red dye number 40 specifically, also red dye number 3, but most specifically red dye number 40, can lead to increase of ADHD or ADHD-like activities in kids.
And ADHD is attention deficit and hyperactivity disorder. This is a developmental disorder that can cause inattention, hyperactivity, and impulsivity. It often starts in kids and continues throughout the lifespan.
Stephanie, you can imagine how hard this is to study.
It's really hard to study because our best evidence in medicine comes from something called a randomized control trial, where you randomly assign people to be exposed to condition 1 or condition 2, and then you compare outcomes. It's really not possible to randomize families and youth to red dye number 3 or not.
And there have been attempts to do so. And even then, it's expected that the risk is very small, so you'd need a huge population in order to see any statistical significance for a kind of a small change. And it's hard to know who is predisposed or who is likely going to develop ADHD with or without.
So it sounds like there's been a couple of really difficult things to manage about these studies. Even when you are able to set up a randomized control condition, there are questions around what we call power, which is how much people you need in a study to actually find a small difference. And then another concern is that most of our evidence comes from longitudinal studies, observational studies, which is observing what people are exposed to in their daily lives and seeing what change there is. So you could see how much red dye number 3 a person is exposed to in their lifetime and see whether that's related with any changes in activity or hyperactivity. But it's really difficult because of confounding.
Confounding is when there's a distortion between an association between an exposure and a health outcome due to like a third variable.
One example of this is that people used to think that coffee caused lung cancer because they would look at how many cups of coffee a person drank and then look at rates of lung cancer. But actually, there was a hidden variable there, cigarette smoking, that people who were cigarette smokers would have more coffee because they would step out, have a cigarette, a cup of coffee. It was cigarettes that were driving the cancer rates, not the coffee. And so when we think about observational studies where we're observing how much red dye number 3 people are exposed to, there's a lot of other confounding factors. Things like access to fresh foods, access to processed foods in general, the socioeconomic status of families, so how much money they have in order to spend on fresh fruits and vegetables versus processed foods, which honestly are often much cheaper at the store.
If you're thinking about what foods probably have the highest rates of dyes, it's things that are probably not that healthy for you and probably are full of sugar. We were talking about candy bars earlier, and that is like a big major component of dyes in the marketplace. And so it is a confounder that, you know, if you're eating more sugar and you are developing hyperactivity, is it because of the sugar? Is it because of the dye?
And it's so tough because when I'm out with my toddler and she is hungry, it's a lot easier and a lot cheaper for me to pick up a candy bar or some kind of unhealthy snack for her than it is for me to be able to find fruit, yogurt, vegetable, cheese, something that might have less processed food, less sugar, less dye in it.
Exactly. And so there have been a lot of attempts to study this. There have been many studies over the past 30 years, and most of them have been pretty inconclusive. The FDA has reviewed the information on Red Dye number 40 multiple times in the past. So it reevaluated its stance in 2011. It reevaluated the stance in 2019. And their statement has been the same, that there has been no clear causal relationship between the exposures of synthetic dyes and hyperactivity in children. And because there's no causal relationship, they are not making any change.
Causal meaning that one directly causes the other. It's a term that we use in medicine and studies to say that something is linked temporally, that one is causing the other.
In 2021, California performed their own review through the Office of Environmental Health Hazards Assessment.
You gotta love California.
And they concluded that the consumption of synthetic food dyes can result in hyperactivity and other neurobehavioral problems in some children, and that children can vary in their sensitivity to synthetic food dyes.
It sounds like they put a lot of qualifiers into that statement.
A lot of qualifiers, but I think what California is trying to say is that some children might be affected a little bit. Not all children. This is not the main cause of ADHD in the population, but some children that have a predisposition to ADHD, some children that have a predisposition to hyperactivity might be a little bit more affected by red dyes than other children.
That makes sense. So it sounds like right now there's this petition on the table from 2022. The FDA is reviewing it. They're expecting to make a decision on red dye number 3, and that decision will probably be made based on the Delaney cause and the risk of cancer. But what people are really worried about is the risk of hyperactivity, which it's hard to study and it's hard to know.
It's really hard to study and it's really hard to know. That being said, color additives, food dyes are not adding anything to food other than making it more marketable, other than making food prettier. And so there is this discussion happening that should we be taking a risk? Should we be allowing something that doesn't provide any benefit to food, or should we be removing it? This idea of the zero tolerance policy.
And one example of how that's come up in our life is buying Tylenol for our daughter. That when I'm at the store buying Tylenol, there are all the different flavors, that the grape, the cherry, cherry's her favorite. And I can buy them that either have dye or are dye-free. And the dye-free ones, they seem like they taste the same, but they're just clear instead of red.
And we're starting to see dye-free products become more and more available, from Tylenol to Pediasure to different types of other candy bars. And there are kind of more natural dyes that you can use. You can use beetroot juice to make things turn nice and red.
Beet juice, brought to you first by The Office.
It was beet juice. I'm a beet farmer.
I think it'll be really interesting to see what is kind of upcoming for the future of synthetic dyes. In September, the FDA had a really large public meeting about reevaluating chemicals in the food, including all color additives, including all food dyes. And they're currently in a public comment period until January 21st, 2025. So if you have any thoughts, if you have any concerns, if you have anything that you want the FDA to take into account, this is the moment to go online at the FDA website and enter your comments into their system.
How can people find that? What website should they go to?
That's a good question, and I should have that available. It's a weird website. It's like hfpapapp.external.fda.gov.
And you can find that FDA link for public comment in our show notes. You can also find it by Googling online, but it's quite a long URL. So instead of spelling it out here and with spelling errors to come, you can just find it in our show notes and add in your comments. If you want the FDA to hear you, now's the time. Public comment is open until January 21st. Alicia, any takeaways for families? I know for me, it sounds like it's hard to really know what the evidence is about these dyes, but it also sounds like they have no nutritional value. So I know for me, when I'm at the store and buying something like medications for my daughter, I will be more careful to buy the dye-free alternative when I can.
Exactly. I think the literature is very unsure, but there's also no benefit, so why take a risk? And there's a growing number of dye-free alternatives, and I'll be interested to see, with this new California ban that's coming into place in 2027, if that's going to lead to a more widespread ban of red dye number 3 and maybe red dye number 40, which we didn't talk about, but is in a separate law in California and will be banned in public school food and drink as of 2028.
And for the moment, it sounds like my daughter won't be getting those chapsticks. They might have been on the holiday discount bin, but I guess just in the interest of being safe, there's no reason to needlessly expose her to dyes when I can just buy dye-free chapstick for her.
And we'll see where the coming administration goes and makes policies with regard to synthetic dyes. RFK has made a lot of statements that food dyes cause cancer, but he hasn't really made an official stance on what his policy will be. So it'll be interesting to see how this progresses in the new year.
Stay tuned here for more updates and information about this. This is the Rollin' Forward podcast.
I'm Alicia Rollin.
I am Stephanie Rollin.
And thanks for listening. You can like, subscribe, send us an email.
rollinforwardshow@gmail.com to email us.
Let us know if you have any questions or things that you'd like us to talk about.
Happy 2025.
Until next time.